welcome to this special episode from NeoZaz.com. I am Matt, and in this episode, we're going to learn a little more about the new Harry Potter Christmas additions to Universal Orlando Resort. And who better to give us those details than my guest today, Senior Director of Entertainment Creative Development for Universal Orlando Resort, Mike Aiello. Mike, thanks for joining us once again, and welcome to the show.
Matt, it's my pleasure. It's great to talk to you again, my friend.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm just going to start with the entire idea of having new additions. Harry Potter, Hogsmeade, and Hogwarts, they've been around for 7 years now, right?
It opened in, 2010. Yeah.
Okay, 7 years. So what finally brought Christmas to Harry Potter this year?
You know, it's interesting because there's so many people involved in the creative process on directly relating to the Wizarding World. There's a lot of valuable people who get to have their fingerprints on that application, and it really was an exercise in when is the right time. You know, we've been thinking about Christmas in the Wizarding World for several years now. Honestly, since that park opened, you know, the Hogsmeade itself is covered in snow, so it's always kind of been in the back of everybody's heads. But we didn't want to just do it to do it. We wanted to make sure it was the right time. And honestly, you know, also in conjunction with a lot of other things we knew we wanted to do with other pieces of content within the park. You know, the parade change out has been almost 2.5-3 years in the making as well. So we knew there was going to be a lot of time and care taken into how these things were going to be created, not only with Potter, but also with our new Universal Holiday Parade. So it really felt, you know, even probably 3 years ago where we really decided, let's set a date. Let's just set a date for, you know, Christmas of 2017. We're going to reveal a massive new overlay to the majority of our content within the holidays, because we knew at, you know, in 2017, it'd be the first major change we've done to our content in probably 15, 16 years.
Wow.
You know, particularly with the Macy's Parade. But so it really was an exercise in how can we really show an impactful change to our holiday program. And it really stemmed off that. And we identified 2017 as the date, you know, almost 3 years ago. And it really took that long to create it, honestly, between the Potter content and all of that possesses, which is all of the decor, all the new shows, and the registered projection show. It was about 2.5 to 3 years for that, which is exactly the amount of time it took for us to redo the entire parade. So it really was this awesome kind of it just kind of all worked out, and its timing was consistent with each other, you know.
So for the Harry Potter editions, the parade is the parade is fantastic, and I don't want to gloss over that by any means whatsoever, but the parade, it's an element that's been there. It's been now, I don't want to say revamped, it's a 2.0. It's a completely new parade. But for Harry Potter, there was nothing before. How do you approach this blank canvas as far as an event, but still having to keep everything in the Harry Potter world? What kind of task is that like to take on when you first approach it?
It always starts with the source material, always starts with the books. And, you know, you're combing through, you know, we've got these awesome, we've got the ability to actually search all the text via keyword search. So we've got these awesome documents that allow us to just put in keywords, Christmas and decorations. And it'll literally bring up passages that relate directly to that within the fiction. So we kind of create this Bible of sorts. Of everything relating to Christmas within the entire series of books, so we collate that, so to speak, and then of course we go into the films and start pulling out every single image that we can find within every single film. So by the end of it, we've created this almost a syllabus of content that we, before we even begin any brainstorming sessions, all of this information is collected. And this is information we've had for a long time. You know, it's not something we started, you know, as soon as we said, okay, we're doing Christmas. We've had this information for a while, but then it's the deep dive into, okay, here's how it exists within the book and in the film. And the unique thing about anything that we've engaged with Potter, we've always been this middle ground between those two ideologies. You've got the literary text, which is literally J.K. Rowling's mind there in ink of this world that she created. And then you have the films, which is this amazing now visual representation and adaptation of her text. And then you have our world, which is a combination of these two amazing ideologies, but now having to be built so that it occupies a 360-degree space, that it looks good not only far away, but, you know, completely up close.
And be immersive, too. It's an immersive environment, which is, I mean, a movie, even with a 3D movie, it's still not as immersive as standing in the middle of either of these lands at Universal.
You're right, and that's never been said better than the cast themselves when they come here, and you know, for Potter Celebration or during our grand openings, they themselves have even said that they never even saw Hogsmeade the way we present Hogsmeade. They never saw Diagon Alley the way we present Diagon Alley, because they were just sets, or they were parts of sets, or they weren't built as high. You know, there was only anything at camera level, so you never saw the complete picture. You know, they never saw Gringotts. You know, when they were filming the films, they can come here and in turn, our guests and fans and people that love this fiction can come here and literally be a part of these worlds. But now, you know, in these holiday months, now they can see it through a new lens, so to speak. They can see it with this amazing decor application that we've done across all of our wizarding worlds. They can experience brand new shows with new Christmas content. And then they can encounter Hogwarts Castle in a completely new way nightly with what I'm very proud of is a beautiful map projection show that transforms Hogwarts Castle into what is the Christmas version of the Wizarding World.
Let's talk about that. I did kind of have that towards the end of my notes, but I can't not take advantage of that. The opening you just set up for that, the projection mapping. I don't honestly know where to start. I have a lot of technical and other questions, but the one thing to start with, I walked away from this show wondering, how the heck did you do this? And one of the things I have to ask you, anything you can tell me about it, is when the Weasleys cover the castle, particularly with their banners, it's clearly a three-dimensional structure. It's a mountain. We've seen it for years. There's no mistaking it's a real structure. When they throw those banners over it, you seem to have flattened that mountain with these projections. How on earth did you accomplish that?
A lot of math.
Okay.
No, you're right. There is a we were fortunate enough to gather the best people in the business as it pertains to map projection, because it was the only way we knew we can go about doing anything relating to that castle, because that castle is iconic not only to us, it's iconic to millions and millions of people all over the world, the way that castle looks. So day one of creative, we knew we needed the best in the business. And there's a company based in Montreal that I worked with extensively. I had many trips to Montreal this past 2 years. It's a company called Moment Factory, and they are truly an amazing group of talented artists who are responsible for the math that is involved with being able to map a structure as iconic as Hogwarts Castle. And it really begins with that. They are brilliant. They're able to do exactly what you described, which was take the rock formation of Hogwarts and turn it into the package that is, Wizard Weasley Weeze's store item. And to do that, it is a massive effort. We have 24 total projectors that are occupied in various places around the castle. Most are completely now hidden within new architecture that we built, because that was also very important to do. There's a lot of technical equipment that needs to exist in order to map and hit every angle of that castle. But we also knew we didn't want anyone to see any of it. We wanted to make sure that every piece of technical equipment was hidden and or camouflaged or surrounded by a piece of architecture that felt like it had been there all the time. So there's a brand new spire that we built that leads towards the bridge that takes you to JP that did not exist before, that houses, I believe, 12 of our projectors. We've got Lighting all around the guests that's in many of the trees that surround the area where the guests stand that that interacts with the castle during the show. But during the day, they appear as pine cones.
Okay.
So that but because we didn't want guests to see bulbs in the trees. So, upon close inspection, you're going to see these trees that you've seen since that park opened in 2010, now kind of adorned with hundreds and hundreds of pine cones that during the day look that way, but at night are translucent enough for us to have an LED fixture inside and give us all the color that surrounds you during the show. So it's a massive, amazing effort by hundreds of people to get that show off. But then the other major portion of it is the creative and how do we translate Christmas onto Hogwarts and what types of visuals allow the castle to still exist as a castle and not become simply a surface to project on. And that was another major, major bullet point that we knew we needed to adhere to because we did not want this to become... We did not want the castle to be anything other than the castle because it can't be. This is a magical world, so there's no reason why me as a villager in Hogsmeade can or be in a place that's near Hogwarts, look at that castle and see some amazing spell that's cast on it that keeps it in world, that keeps it in story. So everything you see in the show, we wanted to make sure followed those very strict rules.
So I'm really curious, and I'm not sure if I'm going to word this or use the right words, but I'll give you kind of the general question. Maybe we can hammer it out. My question is, how many iterations of the show from the first idea you had in your head till what we see in the end did this go through to accomplish everything you just laid out?
Yeah, it was it was about 2.5 years total of creating this show. What a lot of people don't know is this show, in our first concept, this show was actually two different shows. We had one that was related directly to, I think it was called the, that one was called The Magic of Christmas at Hogwarts. And the other, I can't remember the title, but it was mainly Weasley related. So that whole section that you see in the current show actually was about a 2.5 to 3 minute section of its own little, its own show. And we went down that route for a while, actually, having two separate shows because we wanted variety on the castle. But then we discovered very early on that we needed to have one show because we were worried that if we do two separate shows, people are going to stay and wait for two separate shows rather than matriculate out of the area and allow other guests to come in and see it. So we combined those ideas, and that's why Weasleys have a moment, although not inherently Christmas, but the idea that there are packages and these are potential gifts that people would buy for their kids within the Wizarding World, and the fact the Weasleys would definitely take the opportunity to market themselves that they had a captured audience, you know?
Right.
So that iteration was about 6 months after we did the first draft. We combined it into one show. The biggest thing for creating a show like that for me is defining the music first before we do any visuals, do any concept art. I always like to figure out what the music is because that's the primary driving force of the experience is the music, and how the visuals play into that. So for me, it was trying to figure out the emotional value of the scoring, which isn't hard to do when you're working with tracks by John Williams, you know? You've got John Williams, you've got, Nicholas Hooper for Yule Ball, and Alexander Desplat. So there's a lot of different composers that have contributed such amazing music. So that was a really fun exercise of just combing through all those albums and kind of figuring out pieces and parts that we could capitalize on and form into a brand new arrangement that makes up the 8 minutes of the experience. And then you've got the ghosts of Hogwarts Castle, something that you rarely see even in the films. You definitely hear about them in the books, And we've never really done much with them in our adaptation of The Wizarding World. So I saw it as an awesome opportunity to not only give them a voice, you know, because they've got that amazing song in the first film, and you only briefly see it, but it's definitely a track on the album. But also, I loved it that there was a little bit of commonality with, you know, what I think is the greatest Christmas story ever told, which is A Christmas Carol. The fact that ghosts really drive that story. And the fact that ghosts exist within the Wizarding World, I thought it was a really cool opportunity to, and really this is the only world that I think you could get away with having ghosts in a Christmas show, you know, and it totally fits,
you know? Yeah, that makes sense. Yes. So the music you were talking about, something struck me, and I might be way off on this, but I always love hearing about the creative process. When you were talking about taking bits and pieces, while you were formulating the story idea, did you crack open Pro Tools and start copying and pasting bits together to get those ups and downs that you were envisioning what you were envisioning of what was going to go on the mountain?
Oh, no, you bet. Yes. I'm big in doing my own edits first. I did it on the Goon Show.
That's amazing.
The Universal 100 show. I did my own edit first. The first like few iterations of that edit, no one ever hears. It's really just for me to start throwing textures at a timeline. But no, it is a really great way for me to be able to discover, because I'm a musician as well. I play guitar, I play piano, I'm a drummer. So music for me is always a really amazing entry point into a creative process, even if it's not a musical based show. Even when I'm writing, you know, writing treatments, I've got music playing or scores playing that give me an ideology from an audio standpoint, regardless if it's with the brand or not. Music is something that really drives me creatively, no matter what I'm doing. So yeah, then to get the opportunity to apply music to a showpiece, it's a huge portion of my creative process. But also, again, you've got seven soundtracks worth of material that you can, with a main push of the John Williams scores. Heck, I was able to work with the Abbey Road Studios in London, we scored this entire show at Abbey Road.
Oh, this is a complete rescore? This isn't an edit of the existing music?
This is a complete rescore. Absolutely. Yes.
That is fantastic.
Much of the music in order to be able to have it feel authentic in where we're kind of piecing things together. In fact, there's a track when, during the show, which portion, let me explain this right. So it's just before, it's as the lanterns are coming out. We got the lanterns kind of cascading along the castle. And that track is called Christmas at Hogwarts. It's by John Williams. And then you've got the owls that fly in with all the packages. That track, as it exists in the actual soundtrack, is actually one chord as far as its key. We actually modulated the song up one chord so that there was a build in the music when the owls come in, which is different than the soundtrack you're going to hear, when you buy it on, if you stream it or something. So again, there was a lot of manipulation of just how can we affect the tracks so they feel like a seamless transition from one to the other. And that was really important. So yeah, the only place we knew we wanted to do that was with the original orchestra that did the films.
All right. Well, first, that's incredible to hear that, and great that you got the original orchestra as well. That's incredible. And I wouldn't say explained anything I felt missing, but hammers home what an incredible and well-produced show this is.
Oh, thanks. No, it's literally a dream come true to create. I bet, right? And I misspoke earlier. The Yule Ball is actually Patrick Doyle, not Nicholas Cooper. But I want to make sure I got that because I'll have Potter fans emailing me.
No. Well, we're well into music now without even trying. It's almost like an unplanned segue. There are two other shows for Christmas, and they are both musical performances as well. There's Celestine and the Banshees at Diagon Alley and the Frog Choir at Hogsmeade. And again, you've done a fantastic job explaining how you catalog the elements of everything from Harry Potter, including the things for Christmas and including characters that you don't see or just mentioned or rarely seen. But again, here are moments in the Harry Potter world that don't exist. You can't replicate. You have to add to this existing universe. What is it like to now add to this saga, basically?
It's massive pressure. Oh, no. Well, and the Celestina, holiday version of Celestina and the Banshees, presented us with an even greater challenge than when we were first creating the show for Diagon, you know, for the regular daytime show. Because this time around, we did not have titles to be able to pull inspiration from.
Right.
The original show has four songs based on titles that J.K. Rowling herself had already written as part of Celestina's library of tracks. But in this case, there were no holiday versions of her songs that existed in title or in lyric or in music. So this truly was a from the ground up creative process on what type of title and lyric and music still feels authentic, even though no one's ever heard these songs before, or even know they exist, no matter what type of fan you are. You know, these are brand new items, and that there's massive pressure there. But also a whole lot of fun.
I bet. I was going to ask, as much pressure as it is, it had to be as exciting to do though.
Oh yes. And what was key for me in that process was gathering back together all my collaborators on the original show. I've got two amazing lyricists and musicians named Alan Zachary and Michael Weiner. Just brilliant guys that their brains literally are music at all times, and they're absolutely wow. Brilliant. A guy named Joe Zenas with Thinkwell, also a massive, amazing musician to be able to help us with arranging and creating these new tracks. So it started for us with the titles. We had to figure out what are these songs, what are the names? Because then from there, at least we can have some sort of anchor into the lyric process. And then from the lyric, the music kind of finds itself. And we were kicking around all kinds of stuff. I think we had like 25, 30 titles when we started.
Oh, wow.
And all with what we have kind of come to know are the type of titles that fit within a Celestina song list. You know, they're usually a little wordy. They're usually a little bit of a tongue twister. They, you know, like, wait, what's the song in the regular show? Beat Back Those Bludgers, Boys, and Chuck That Quaffle Here is the name of a song in the regular daytime show. That's a massive title. So in turn, we're like, okay, what's a title that kind of feels that long and also maybe that kind of tongue twistery? And I think it was Alan that's like, well, what if it's called a Witch and Wizard's Wintry Wondrous Land? I'm like, oh, that sounds good. And that sounds like a ballad. Let's go down that path. And we did. And it formed itself. I remember when I wrote down the title Accio Christmas. Which is basically, you know, summoning Christmas. That's what the title mm-hmm. means. And we were trying to figure out what could that be? And I think I threw out the idea of, what if it's like inspired by like a Feliz Navidad of the Wizarding World, those types of textures, that kind of feel, what would that sound like? And Alan and Michael, again, geniuses, immediately started, you know, Michael started playing piano and Alan started singing and in this kind of calypso kind of inspired fusion type thing. And it just worked. And like, that's actually my favorite song in the entire show. Accio Christmas is my favorite. And hit the Hippogriff song. My baby gave me a Hippogriff for Christmas, which is literally the Wizarding World's I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas. That's what that.
Yeah, as soon as I heard the title, it's unavoidable to make the association in your mind, I think. And if that was the intended plan, then perfect. You hit the nail on the head.
Although these are new songs and they definitely have a wizarding twist to them, we wanted them to feel as if people have heard them for years. You know?
Oh, right. Okay.
We want them to feel like these are carols and or songs that have existed in the Wizarding World for decades and decades and decades. These songs are the Deck the Halls. They are the Silent Nights. They are the Jingle Bells. And then Celestina simply putting her twist on them, you know?
Yeah. And you actually, along with the pressure of making it distinctly Harry Potter, you also have to make it distinctly Christmas and combine the two. So you kind of double down on your stress. That's a monumental task for a show like that.
It is, but man, when you surround yourself with some amazing people that have equally passionate minds about the brand and about the talent they bring to the table, It is the coolest journey ever, man. It really is. And again, it has its fair share of trials and stresses and oh my gosh, I hope this works and I hope the fans really enjoy it. I hope people that don't really know Potter enjoy it. Again, there's all these things that enter in and out of the equation at all times, mm-hmm. but at the end of the day, and you know, this is synonymous with everything that we get to create here and anybody involved in any sort of process with this park is, you know, you're just putting yourself into it and strapping yourself in and hoping that at the other side it's something everybody likes and that you have had a really fun ride doing it. And at the end of the day, it's something people enjoy. That's what goes into it.
Yeah, yeah, it certainly is. I have enjoyed it immensely, and I don't think that there's any question that the passion you guys had going into this project is not being shown to everyone that comes to enjoy it. There's no mistake that this was not something put together in order to just have, but something that was made with a lot of heart, a lot of fandom, and a lot of pride put behind it.
Thanks, man. No, I'm glad that really shows, because it's beyond truth, man. It really is.
Right.
There's a lot of people that are just so amazing at what they do, and I'm just thrilled I get to collaborate with them day to day. It's a blessing, man.
Well, great. We're in our final minutes. I want to leave these for you. If there's anything that we have not discussed that you want everyone to know, please share that if you could.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about Potter, but I you mentioned it a bit earlier, but I'd be remiss not to mention, you know, the other huge equation to our holiday program, which is the new parade, Universal's Holiday Parade featuring Macy's.
Absolutely, yes.
This is a huge new parade, you know, built from the ground up. It has 15 brand new floats, I think 13 balloons, all new. Again, no one has ever seen these things before in a holiday parade here at the studios. So this is a huge undertaking, brand new score, new costumes, over 100 performers. It is really the major holiday anchor for our studio park and something that is unlike any holiday parade anyone's seen at Universal Orlando.
I couldn't agree more with that statement. It is an amazing parade. My co-host Shelby and I, we came out for the entire run of the event, and the parade is the first thing that we race back to the next night. I intend to see it and everything, and all the Harry Potter shows again, but the parade was, I was blown away. There was no other way to say it. My initial review on social media, it was just three letters. It was wow, because I couldn't describe it any more than that until I sat back and thought about what I just saw.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Yeah, no, we, again, another amazing team putting blood, sweat, and tears into the parade. Laura Wallace, she was the show director on that project, and she led an amazing team of people technically and creatively to give us this awesome new holiday parade that will provide joy to our guests this year and for years to come. I think it's yep. really a I honestly believe we've raised the bar for what we do here as far as the holiday parade is concerned.
Yeah, you absolutely have. And I had an opportunity to talk to Laura right after, and she has the same exact enthusiasm and pride for all this that you had during this interview. Again, no doubt, I don't think anyone walks away from this thinking this isn't something you guys put your all into and came out with something that you should be really, really proud of.
Oh, thanks, man. No, it's an awesome Christmas this year, man. I mean, we've had gifts for the last few months. These amazing gifts, and the other thing too that a lot of people don't know is the team that did all the holiday also did Halloween at the same time. So I mean, I can't stress enough how amazing, frankly, all the teams at Universal in how they interact with our seasonal programs, because it's not just entertainment. You've got PR, you've got marketing, you've got all these groups that are constantly multitasking to create content on a seasonal basis that is, in some cases, brand new every year, like for Halloween. So it's just an amazing effort. I'm so proud to work with so many people here that just are so amazingly talented. It's just, it blows me away. And I've been here, what, almost 22 years now, maybe 23 if I'm counting.
Oh, my goodness.
And there's not a day that goes by that I'm not surprised by the people and what they're able to bring and offer. It's just, it's astounding.
That's great. Well, that is our time, Mike. And as always, anytime I talk to you, it is absolutely flown by.
It's like a time warp, man.
I know, right? So let me just say that all of the holiday events we've been talking about are happening right now. It's going on and it's running until January 6th, and everything that we've been talking about runs every night as well. Definitely, if you have not seen this year's event or haven't been to Universal for Christmas in any amount of time, you have to see it this year. There's just no other way to put it. This is the must-see event, I think, for the theme parks in Orlando this year. And Mike, great job. Congratulations. I didn't want to leave without saying that. And of course, thank you for your time. As always, it's been a blast to talk to you.
Matt, it's a pleasure talking with you every time, man. I really appreciate it. And Merry Christmas to you and your family, man.
Thank you. You as well. And your team. Your team. They deserve to have a fantastic Christmas as well.
Yeah, I think they're all sleeping now.
Yeah, no doubt, I'm sure. So, well, that wraps it up. Thank you again, Mike, for your time. Thank you, Universal Studios, for setting this all up. You can see everything we talked about at Universal Orlando Resort in the Universal Studios and Islands of Adventure parks right now, and more, including Grinchmas and the Blues Brothers Christmas show, along with all the wonderful holiday decorations. Again, it's happening right now. It runs until January 6, 2018, and everything we talked about in this episode happens every night, so go check it out. Check out more of our coverage on Universal Studios at neozaz.com, along with all our other shows. We have a big focus in pop culture. Chances are, if you have an interest in pop culture, there's a show or at least one special that we have done covering that. So visit neozaz.com for more on that. And follow our social media pages. We are Neozaz on Instagram and Twitter, and Neozaz Podcast on Facebook. I am Matt, and finally, I want to thank you for taking time to listen to this special episode. We will be back with more on Universal Studios, more on Christmas at neozaz.com, and more of many other things to come. So please check that out. Have a happy holiday, and I will see you in that next episode.